Welcome to the May edition of BBRO Bcast. I'm Francesca Broom, your host and Knowledge Exchange Manager for BBRO. I would like to say what a glorious start we've had to the season, but unfortunately that wouldn't be true. We are still fighting with the rain, and I know there's a lot of you out there struggling to get the last of your sugar beet drilled. But there is hope. Weather is going to warm up as we get on for this month, and hopefully we're going to have a reasonable year ahead of us. But we will warn you that aphids have been found in crop, and the BBRO aphid survey is underway. Towards the end of April, I did take a trip over to Holcombe. Again, not a particularly sunny day, but it was a nice trip out all the same. And I caught up with Connor Tindall-Reed, the assistant manager at Holcombe Farming, and our very own George Barrett. I join them as they discuss the on-site tillage project and the learnings from year one. Lovely to be with you here today, Connor, and we're joined with Dr. Georgina Barrett as well. And we're over at Holcombe, which is such a fantastic site and estate here, which we are, as BBRO, very pleased to have some trials on.
Yes.
So, Connor, first of all, how long have you been with Holcombe?
So I'm now coming into my eighth year working at Holcombe. So I started off as a tractor driver, trailer driver, and working with the livestock team. And then in 2021, moved into an assistant farm manager role. So sort of worked my way up through the ranks as such.
That must be quite a daunting thing, though, because I mean, Holcombe is the jewel in the crown, isn't it, for the most of Norfolk, and one of those places that a lot of farmers look up to find out what's going on. So assistant farm manager, that must be quite a job to be trying to manage.
It has its challenges, but it's heavily rewarding, I'd say. Holcombe is more than just a farm or just a tourist destination. There's more departments, I think, I can count. There's a lot. Yeah, we employ, I think, roughly about 300-350 people on the estate, so there's always something going on. With it comes more challenges than just the day job. There's always tie-ins with other departments. More than just managing my direct team, it's then the relationship with the wider estate, but like I say, rewarding to say the least.
And I do know you have an awful lot of trials that are here, not just us from BBRO, and that must be quite difficult to try and make sure that you are looking after those and also incorporating what's happening within the Holcombe remit. And I do know that you've been very good to our BBRO staff, because there's been a number of times I've heard of sausage rolls or hot chocolate in the field.
That was a matter of 10 degree.
Yeah.
In the air, but it was probably a 5 degree wind chill on that, so when we were doing the trial last year. So, yeah, my partner, lovely, it's lovely to make some food to bring out to everyone. we have quite a lot going on the farm as it is. Within Catalyst, our collaboration group with three of the Norfolk businesses, we've got quite a lot of trials going across the farm. Making sure they're all done properly is quite hard, especially when you've got multiple operators on machines, multiple different trials looking at different things. I think this year we're probably a little bit more focused on what we're doing, so we're more in depth but less spread out, as it were, which is why the beet trial works quite well. We can throw a lot of resource at it and really sort of dive into the detail.
And it's really quite a different trial, certainly for us, isn't it, Georgina?
Yeah. Well, the challenge we have is, I always joke with the crop protection team that they do a lot of like small plot work where you can, you know, spray a plant protection product in a small area. Does it do what it's meant to do? Does it not? You know, you can play around with timings and things like that. A lot of the research we do more on the crop production side is looking at farming systems, and that's something you can't put in a small plot very easily. So working with people like Holcombe is really, really important, because we need to start assessing different farming practices with the right equipment. So the same cultivators, the same tractors that are being used in practice, to really test some of these bigger questions around sort of tillage and wider management of the sugar beet crop, but also in the context of other crops. And that's something that BBRO is really pushing for at the moment. We need to not just look at everything in silos. We need to look at sugar beet and its wider impact, particularly the impact it has on the following crop. So talking to a lot of growers, one of the frustrations with sugar beet can be the legacy effect it has. So doing research that tries to minimise that and tries to make sure beet isn't having any negative long-term impacts within the wider rotation is really important. And we can only do that working on farm with farmers.
So the actual project we've got here is actually looking at tillage practices and then cultivations. So, but why here, why now?
That's a great question. So There was a lot of talk about 18 months ago, and there still is around SFI, but there are a lot of more unanswered questions. And one of the areas of discussion was whether there was going to be payment for reducing tillage depth. And then that fitted into a wider discussion we've been having regarding soil health. So minimising soil movement is quite an underpinning practice. We know that reducing your soil movement reduces your fuel burn, your carbon emissions from the machinery you're using, which has a fuel saving cost. But also with regards to looking after your soil biology, sort of minimising that movement of the soil is really important. But that's something that's quite difficult for sugar beet. So that got us thinking, what could we do at BBRO to look at reducing tillage depth? And how would that affect the crop going forward? And particularly now, we're not always purely pushing for yield. There's that financial balance. So one of the questions we had was, if we reduce tillage depth and have cost savings associated with that, would that then actually make our margins better, even if we lost a little bit of yield and had a problem there? And that's why it was important to come onto farm. And that's why we then approached Holcombe, who'd been playing around with a few different things and wanted to look at some different tillage practices.
So I'm not quite sure whether it was poison chalice or a bit of a, you know, fighting gauntlet thrown down at you, Connor. But how many different practices have you looked at?
So historically, we used to be a fairly straightforward system where we'd go through our standard cultivator, which when I first started was a Discordon, which we quickly moved to a Valestat Opus, so a Tyne cultivator. We'd then follow that up with a Lemkin compactor, which is a very, very fine roller and tine configuration. Made a really, really good sugar beet seedbed everywhere, but it was with the system we were employing with cover crops. The really fine cultivator was struggling a little bit to deal with any trash, and we were then sort of, one, struggling with output and also struggling for sort of drought tolerance. Yeah, we were working the ground probably a bit too much that we were, if we then went to a dry spell, it was becoming quite apparent that it was an issue. So yeah, we've moved the farm to a more flexible end system with a bit more capacity involved, so we can run the cultivator quicker. So we've not gone up in machinery size, so we run a 6 metre cockling all rounder, but we run it with a bigger tractor. But that means we're cultivating at the right speed all the time. So it doesn't slow down or bog down when we get into any tougher ground. We're doing the right job across the whole area, and then when we need to, if we need to run the machine longer, we can cover a lot more ground. If we have to, then if it's still not doing quite enough on the heavier bits of ground, we do follow up with a secondary cultivation with a Vadastad carrier, more as a sort of consolidation and just sort of slightly breaking down effect of any clods. The trial itself, we sort of pulled out every tool in our toolbox. We used a 3 metre Vadastad coltis to keep in with the 18 metre strips. So that was that's the 3 metre equivalent of the Vadastad Opus we use across the farm. We used the plough, which we haven't conventionally used in sugar beet preparation. We used our farm standard all rounder. And then we used the Vadastad carrier. So this is all after a cover crop. We obviously had the carrier sort of quite fleet at 5 centimetres. We then went in with the all-rounder at 5, 10 and 15. We then went in with the coltis at 25 and 30, and then the plough at 30. So we went varying depths, varying machinery, and looked at the after effect.
So that was 7 different types of cultivation from there?
4 different machines, but at different depths. And
yeah. And I know you said you don't often plough it, but you've got quite light, sandy soil.
Yeah.
Yeah, but great to be able to see the impact here, particularly if you haven't used it for a long while.
Yeah, so the plough for us is an as-and-when tool. I will not ever say to anyone that everyone needs to sell their ploughs, because this year, with the winter we've had, we've relied on it a lot in areas, especially after beet that's been lifted in tricky conditions. I think anyone that is trying to say that the plough is the devil is probably pushing the wrong rhetoric. It's where do you use it and where does it make sense to use it? For us, the trial highlighted quite an interesting issue that brought quite a lot of weed beet, which we hadn't. Well, since I've started, and I think since my manager James started, we haven't seen weed beet on there because we haven't grown sugar beet on that field before. Yeah, it was quite a surprise to see the sheer number come through, which we then couldn't really deal with after the fact.
And then that was just on the ploughed strips.
Yeah.
So I know I have seen some of the photos, so that really did stand out, I think, didn't it? That, by disturbing the soil, quite more problem or an issue brought to the surface.
Yeah, so on that soil type there, which what I'd like to say is in quite good condition, it's in a fairly kind rotation, quite a lot of organic manures over the years. The plough was quite a lot heavier on the fuel usage, and then to have, I think it was about a 20% drop in beet yield, is it, George?
Yeah, 20%.
That's quite a cost saving from both ends. It costs us a lot to do that part, and then there's no benefit to it whatsoever in terms of establishment. Obviously, again, that's our farm, that's our field. It might not be the same if you go in any neighbouring county to where we are here in Norfolk. But I think the lessons are still the same there, that it's probably more the farming system that allows you to reduce the cultivation, not just the cultivator itself.
But that's some of the beauty of us actually doing trials here, is that we can find a field big enough that we can actually put the machines side by side and really see the difference. Whereas, yeah, if we're doing like a whole field or a small plot trial, you don't really have enough to compare, because there's too many other factors that are involved. So, George, you just mentioned there was a 20% difference in yield with the ploughed field. What about the rest of the strip trials?
So it's quite interesting. The carrier at 5 centimetres, the beet were visibly behind to start with, which makes sense. You'd expect that. Obviously, it hadn't freed up the soil at depth, so it was a bit slower getting down and rooting and the plant really establishing, as you'd expect. The other treatments all looked pretty similar. The challenge throughout the whole of last year was actually a relatively amenable year for sugar beet, as we know. I think the overall story of the year was big beet were grown. It was just a lack of light that reduced our overall sugar levels. So I think we didn't really have the contrast. The sort of dry, you know, tillage practice is really going to show when you've got dry, challenging conditions, and we just didn't really have those to drive the differences. And that did result in the carrier beet catching up. By the end of June, there wasn't a discernible difference in the biomass between any of the treatments, bar the plough, where the weed beet had started to compete and reduce the growth there. And then when we got through to harvest, again, that's when we found the figure of the 20% reduction due to the weed beet competition. But the other tram lines and treatments were all similar.
Obviously, that was a good learning point for year one. What have you done different for year two?
So year two is reducing the number of treatments with regards to, we weren't seeing massive differences, so doing less but in more detail is what we're going to do this year. And me and Connor before this recording were having a bit of a chat about sort of plans and things. So the sort of magic number in research is 3. You always want 3 of everything as a comparison. So having a discussion about doing 3 replications, going down to 4 treatments will give us similar numbers and similar areas to look after. But the statistics and the scientific side of things will be even more robust than last year then.
And when it comes to actually doing the harvest, what else are you looking at? Obviously, the canopy mass and yield. Is there anything else that you're collecting data?
Not once we get to harvest. Prior to harvest, we obviously, establishment counts are important. Again, they didn't show any significant differences. And then just going through and taking regular biomass harvests. We've got that through the season up to yield to try and tell that story. And then the really big novel part of this work on the scientific research front is measuring greenhouse gas emissions from the soil. Tillage can have a massive impact on CO2 emissions. As most of you know that would be listening, soil's full of life. It's like a little mini ecosystem in itself. And every time you disturb that ecosystem and you introduce oxygen, you have a big flux of respiration. Everything's very happy and healthy, but you actually overstimulate it. You get that breakdown of organic matter and loss of soil organic matter. So one of the great things about reducing tillage is you're keeping the balance in that ecosystem in your soil, and you're conserving the carbon where you want it. And one of the ways we can measure that is post the tillage practice, go in with an infrared gas analyzer. So we've got a gas net system, and we install these metal collars, we clip onto the top of them, and we can measure the CO2 emission from that part of the soil. We're still at a point where we're developing our protocol and looking at the data, and we still need to get some verification on that before I can share the results, but we're very close to being there now.
And have you actually seen, I mean, obviously you can't tell me which ones, but have you seen any difference between the practices?
Not as much as I expected. There's always that balance, and this is what's great about doing trials on farm and having scientists together, is working through things to get the best approach and the best protocol in place. So as I've just sort of alluded to, there's a very quick burst of CO2 when you disturb the soil. So really you need to, in a dream world, be right behind the tractor doing your measurements. However, because of robustness and having things to be repeatable, you have to put these chambers in, you have to measure the same area of soil. So what we did last year is we put the collars in for the measurements and then came back the next day and measured, but we'd probably miss that real initial flush of CO2. And it's a problem. There's other researchers that I talk to working in this area. There's quite a good community of us, and they have similar problems. So this year it's trying to really minimise that time between the cultivations happening and measuring. And the other thing we're going to do this year is get closer to on-farm standard practice. So last year was a bit of a look at what we could do, and the fact that Connor and the team at Holcombe were really amenable. They did the tillage, but then they gave us a day to measure and then they came in to drill. This year, cultivations and drilling are going to happen at the same time as they would normally on farm, and we're going to measure the emissions behind the drill.
That sounds to me like you need to be bringing the sausage rolls over to the team.
They did get a very nice Christmas hamper.
Oh, so. Okay. So as long as they're being looked after, because we might need them to help them running behind the drill or the harvester. So obviously there's a lot to be thinking about going forward, and you've dropped ploughing, but have you replaced that with anything else? Is there anything else that you can be looking at that we should perhaps be collecting data on?
So this year we've changed the trial around that we are not, so we're not doing variable depth across the programme, so we're going to stick with one, what I'd call the, what I would say is the normal working depth, or the effective working depth of each machine, and then we're dropping the plough out and going for a strip till instead. So Jack Robinson and Keith Farm Partnership, who neighbour us, are very kindly supplying their tractor machine to help us put the strip till in. So the idea then is they'll go first, put the strip till in, we'll then work around them, because the strip till has to match exactly where the drill's going to go. That's the only sort of caveat to that. We'll then work the other trial plots around them, and then, yeah, we'll go with that, which is probably a bit more representative of the options going forward, or what, you know, people are looking at going forward.
Certainly a lot of interest in strip till at the moment, isn't there?
We've demoed a strip till machine before. The only problem we've seen with strip till a little bit is, one, getting it to match up perfectly. We operate a 18-row, 9-metre Vallestad Tempo L here as a sugar beet drill, which is quite an unconventional size, I think, in the industry. Yeah. Trying to find machinery that matches to that is quite a challenge. We demoed a 4-metre Koons Dryger, I think it was called before, which we saw good results behind that. It was quite a bit more drought tolerant. I think it was 2021 we demoed that. And that we went to quite a severe dry period after drilling. And we had, I think everything started to flag after a little while, but the strip till stuff certainly held itself up longer and it managed for longer. Whether the gains are more there for wider row spacing, so maize on 75 centimetres rather than beet on 45 or 50, I'm not too sure. The other thing that is making me more likely to look at now is we've changed a little bit how we run the drill now. So we run a GPS dome on the drill itself, so we're taking a little bit of that variability out. So I'm hoping this year, especially with this strip till trial, we'll be able to see that actually we can make it work on various machinery sizes, so it's something we will look at going forward, definitely.
And it is amazing how technology has moved on, that you can now, using the technology, get different machines to match up better, yeah, as long as you can get the spacings altered. But it takes a little bit of time to manage, doesn't
it's
it?
A big headache. I feel like every time we try and get more technological, it gets more and more complicated. Again, that's why the Tempo is, it works quite well for us, because it's quite a, I'd say it's a more versatile drill. So one, we can drill various crops with it, so we can drill our oilseed rape and our maize with it, but also we can go into some quite trickier seedbeds. We can afford to be a little bit more forgiving on how the seedbeds are before drilling. There's a lot of operator intuition, which I'm quite fortunate I've got here in my team, that I've got a couple of guys keeping it at its best, but it takes a lot. I'd say rather than a conventional like monosem or a monopill, it definitely needs people driving it that know what they're doing. It's not a set and forget machine at all.
I think as well, the other interesting thing on the ploughing, and it was very much anecdotal because we'd sort of stopped our assessments at that point, but you were saying some of your operators were noticing, particularly when driving the harvester, that the plough strips were a little bit harder to deal with and get the beet out from.
Yeah, certainly trailer drivers. So the harvester's quite fortunate, it'll glide across most things. I was still seeing wheelings behind that on the deeper cultivations. The plough is stuck out more than anything, that wherever the plough trials were, the trailers were really slow to get away from the harvester and get back to the headland and get off the field. The harvester, you could see that was sinking in a bit more, and then on the shallower cultivation areas, it was absolutely fine.
And is that something, George, that you might reconsider on another soil type?
I think that's a really good point, Ches, and we've all said it, we've all caveated this with Holcombe is a light, reasonably amenable soil to deal with, and had a lot of questions about that. So we are really keen to do something similar to this on a heavier soil type. So if anyone's listening to this that doesn't mind me basically coming onto farm and playing a bit of farming simulator with the right tractors and the right bit of kits going up and down and all over the place. But it is really beneficial for anyone that takes part, because it means we're on farm assessing. You know, Holcomb means they've got someone from BBRO in the crop regularly having a look at what's going on, as well as getting data that's, you know, tailored to your farming system. And I think that's a wider part of my journey as well at BBRO, and how I see the areas of research that I look after progressing is approaches need to be specific to farms, even more so fields, and attention to detail is the future of farming. We can't cover that as a small 16-person organisation. What we can do is really help you guys on farm if there's something you want to try or assess sort of robustly, if you can do some of these trials, where as long as there's three replications of strips, you know, not next to each other, randomised a bit, we can then come in and help assess and generate data that's useful for the whole industry, because the more people that are doing this, the more data we have to analyse and look at, but also getting customised recommendations and results on farm. And that goes from tillage. Cover crops is another big one. There's so much discussion over what the best cover crops, methods of destruction. There's so many options out there. The best thing you can possibly do is go and try it on farm, try a few strips, see what works for you. And we're always keen to get involved, hear about what you're doing and help support where we can with that. And it sort of goes full circle to what we were saying at the beginning, that we can't do farming systems changes and assess this sort of more holistic approach on a small plot, in a specific field, on a specific day. We need as many people as possible doing things on their farms, but then sharing that to the wider community.
So the call is out there. If anyone listening can come and help, it'll be 2025. You don't want to suddenly have something thrown at you now, do you?
But, no.
Perhaps be able to have another challenge and something else to compare, which would be great.
Yes, definitely.
So this is obviously year two here at Holcomb. How many more years have you got here?
That's a good question. So officially, it was always three. I said the magic number in research is three. But as long as these guys are interested and always generating good data, we hope to keep progressing. And I think every year we do it, it will become less work in the fact that we're better clued up as to what each party needs in that relationship. So we, you know, don't have to sit and negotiate the ins and outs of, you know, tractor widths and what speed machines can work out and what depths they can work out, and then what measurements I've got to come in when they work. We sort of understand that now, and that basis is there. So actually progressing each year should be a lot more straightforward, unless we choose to make it more complicated, which...
Well, we've spoken before about looking whether we do a matrix for the year after and look at the following crop impact and then do again a cultivation trial on the following spring barley, which is something for the future. Again, it's the wider rotational impact of sugar beet.
And that would work quite well with your carbon emissions work, because there you're looking at more than just the sugar beet crop, aren't you?
It's a really good point, Chez. So yeah, that work as well is making sure that we are following the legacy effects of the sugar beet crop into the following crop. And it's funny you say into barley, that's exactly Morley and the flux towers and the carbon measurements we're doing there. We're leaving them in to cover the following barley crop to see what the effects are. So yeah, doing that sort of work.
And as listeners, you won't be aware, but when George was there mentioning that we might be here a little bit longer than 3 years, Connor did smile and seemed to be quite amenable to the idea.
Oh no, definitely. Now, also, I think the key part from our side has been this whole trial has been that it only works if both parties put into it. There's no point, in my mind, there's no point in us hosting a trial if we're not actually going to try to work it effectively. If we leave it to the last field of the season all the time and then just only have one or two machines there and sort of treat it as a hindrance rather than something that actually requires our active attention, it's already doomed to start from the get-go, I think.
And we hope that working in partnership with you, also the data and stuff that we provide, can help you in farming in future years.
Yeah, no, definitely. We're looking at things a lot more closely now. So the carbon data that George and her team are taking is more than just for beet. For us, it's looking at actually what are our different cultivation methods that we have available to us producing. As things go forward, that's what everyone seems to be focusing on. It's quite an important thing for the business as a whole, really.
Well, we shall watch this very closely and undoubtedly catch up with you at a later date to find out how the project is progressing. So thank you ever so much for having us, Connor and George, for attending.
Thanks, Chez.
We hope that's provided you with some food for thought, and we look forward to keeping you updated as the project progresses. In the meantime, being May, we're out in the field from the 14th to the 16th, please look at the BBRO website, bbro.co.uk/events, to book a place to our aphid and virus special and also updates on weed control and other timely crop issues. That just leaves me to say, roll on summer, and thank you very much for listening.